Hey, everybody, it's Kat, and I want to welcome you to this episode of Backstory Sessions. I'm joined today by my co-host, Matt. Hey, Matt, happy Easter.
Hey, Kat, happy Easter. Hey, everyone, happy Easter to you as well.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a really important holiday in the year, and people celebrate it, you know, in many ways, whether I think when you're a child, you know, it's kind of a little bit more exciting, but, you know, adults, they really like get into it too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like a candy holiday. So for kids, it's probably the same as like Halloween, maybe?
Yeah, I would say a lot like that. Only, you know, you get to hunt for the prize egg.
Right. Yeah.
I forget here in Barberville today, they had, you know, the Easter egg hunt for the city or whatever. And I don't know, it was like 25,000 or something, 250,000. I don't know. I mean, it's an astronomical amount of Easter eggs that they hid for the children.
250,000 would be quite a lot.
Well, you know, 25,000 is quite a lot, too.
Yeah.
But it was, I think they were in three, like, you know, different age group things. But, you know, it was like 250 prizes, too, or something. So, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of work went into that.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of prizes they were.
So I do know this. I don't know what kind of prizes were for that, but based on starting at, I think it was like 2 o'clock, they made an announcement that in the downtown of Barberville, Kentucky, that they had hidden like 7 or 8 gold eggs. And all you had to do was go and like find those, then send a picture and, you know, give me the instructions, and you got $50.
So, wow, nice.
Yeah, so, you know, that'll buy you, like, quite a bit of Easter candy, especially if you wait. Now, this is a tip. Wait until Monday when it gets marked. Take your $50.
Yeah.
You can get a lot more candy at that time.
Yeah, good thinking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the sad thing is, like, it may be the not as good candy because,
yeah, it's always like that rusty Stover candy instead of the Hershey stuff, because nobody wants that.
Russell Stover's, you know, oh my gosh. Well, you can already not find a white chocolate bunny, I'm told, so.
In Kentucky?
Know, I would say more in the Tri-County area.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, who knows? It could be in all of Kentucky. That stuff's pretty good. I know you don't prefer it, but because we did have this as a poll question, but.
Right. Yeah. I'm not a big, I mean, I guess it's the same, but I don't know. It's just maybe a psychological thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I can't eat a whole, like, bunny rabbit of any kind. Like, I cannot eat just, you know, like a bunch of chocolate of any kind all at once like that.
Yeah, well, you know, get sick just like Halloween, eat too much of it.
Yeah, so, but I do like the hollow ones better than the others, because, you know,
than the solid ones.
Yeah.
Why would that be?
I think because you can almost eat the whole bunny.
Okay, well, what part do you start with?
The ear.
Yeah, well, do you, like, break off a chunk, or you just...
Yes, I break off the ear.
Well, you're not alone in that. Apparently, 59% of people eat the ears first.
Woo, I'm normal.
There you go.
What about you?
I would probably, I don't know, I'd probably break off a piece of, like, punch a hole in the body or something and just break a piece off. I don't know.
Punch a hole in the Easter bunny.
No, yeah, like in the side of it, you know?
Oh my gosh, you need to be in anger management.
Yeah. Well, you're biting his ear off. So. Yeah, like well. Mike Tyson or something.
Yeah. There's something wrong with both of us.
There but. You go.
Mike Tyson, oh my God. Well, anyways, you know, so it is good to be normal. What else you got there? Like, raise me up a little bit higher.
Well, so what, when you were a kid, what was the big meal on Easter? Did you do, like, you know, was anything special for Easter?
I mean, you know, I'm sure we probably did, but the only thing I really remember, you know, tradition wise is that we would dye Easter eggs. So mom would, you know, boil how many ever, and, you know, we'd all get those little, you know, what was that?
The Paws kit.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you know, it had that little thing almost like a bubble blower.
Yeah.
And you had to like balance your egg in that.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, you could write like prize egg or, you know, whatever. You're like, I mean, you know, mine were always ugly. Like, later, they came out with those, you know, stickers and wraps and glitter stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mine were always one color. I never got real fancy with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, then one color's good enough because really, yeah. What does it matter?
Really. But, so, do you know what the color, you know, why Easter eggs were colored back in the day?
Let's see. So people could find them?
No.
So people couldn't find them and they would like camouflage?
No.
Okay. Because, you know, I don't really know.
Okay. So apparently the, you know, Easter's a fairly religious holiday. It isn't just about rabbits and
that sort of thing.
So apparently the colors represented the blood of Christ or something along those lines. That's what I had read.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, blood is blue, right? You know, before it gets oxygen.
Yeah. Well, apparently that isn't, you know, that hasn't been Siri verified, but that is one theory, apparently.
About the blood being blue?
No, like the the color, you know.
Okay, I was like,
the reason for coloring eggs.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know. That's a possibility. It's a, yeah, sounds good enough to me. So I mean, I thought I had some pretty good answers, so.
Did you guys have ham on Easter?
Yeah, my dad, you know, was a big ham person, and I just don't really care for it all that much, so.
You didn't like ham?
We did have ham, and my mom would put the brown sugar and the pineapples.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was. And then you could make her made from scratch biscuits and all.
Yeah. With lard, I'm sure, instead of, you know.
Well, you know, I did not learn the secret recipe.
Oh, you didn't? She didn't tell you that.
I mean, she probably tried to, but I had no interest in biscuit making. So.
I see. Yeah. Well, so apparently traditionally it was lamb that was the meal of choice.
I can see that, you know, because unfortunately that is the one that gets killed quite often.
So. Yes. Yeah. Well, apparently it became more of a tradition to have ham because hams would be cured over the winter months, and by spring they would be ready to serve. So that's why.
Well, I can see them being cured. That, you know, they're so salty. That's one reason I don't really like ham all that much. So.
Yeah, I mean it can be for sure.
But you know, I mean, my dad did love it, and a lot of people do, and that is what many people will have tomorrow. For dinner.
Yep, I'm sure.
I mean, tonight, you know, like,
yeah.
Or had earlier, or whatever for their celebration.
Right. So apparently, the tradition of Easter eggs has a sort of a weird medieval origin.
You mean evil?
No, medieval. back okay. in medieval times. So apparently a priest would give one of the choir boys a hard-boiled egg, and the boys would pass it around amongst themselves until the clock struck midnight, and whoever was holding the egg got to eat it. That was the big tradition back then. Kind of weird.
So is that like a punishment or is that a good thing?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it was like, you know, it's kind of like musical chairs. The last person with a seat wins, you know, but this is like the last person with the egg, you know, and, you know, getting to eat the egg after it's been passed around 100 times.
Well, I mean, is that the reward or the punishment if you get stuck with the egg at midnight?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, you know, who would want to eat an egg that's been passed around all day?
I know. Like, that's, yeah. So, I would be, like, not really thinking that was a good thing. So, it's pretty interesting that was ever even thought of. So.
Yeah, no. No, I'll pass on that one.
Yeah, pass, because you don't want to be stuck with it at midnight.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that you're not really a fan of like deviled eggs or things like that anyways.
Oh, no.
So, you know, that is a big treat that a lot of people have for Easter too.
It is not a treat for me.
Yeah. You know, luckily you just stick with the candy.
Okay, so let's see. So we just had Good Friday, right?
Yes.
Did you know that there's only 12 states that that recognize Good Friday as a holiday?
Well, I mean, it is a sacred holiday, so. I would think Christians, wherever they may be in whatever states, would recognize it as, you know, the day that Christ was crucified. So
yeah.
That's interesting, you know, that it wouldn't be like acknowledged in the states. I'm sure Kentucky is one that it is acknowledged in.
Let's see. New Jersey, North Carolina, Tennessee. And apparently it's not going to tell me the rest. So, sorry.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll just speak for Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yes, that we do recognize that as Good Friday. You know, so.
So, where do you think the idea of the Easter Bunny delivering candy and eggs originated?
Well, you know, tricks are for kids. Like, that was a bunny, right?
Yeah.
So it had to be before that. You got Bugs Bunny. You know, so I'm going to say it had to do with a cartoon of some kind.
No. So it originated in Germany, probably back in the 16th century.
Okay. No cartoons there.
No. No. And then the Dutch settlers brought it to Pennsylvania in the 1700s.
Wow.
So, there you have it.
Well, to go along with that, do you know that many children, like clowns, are scared of the Easter Bunny, I read. So.
Yeah, I don't get that. I mean.
I don't even know if it's true, but, you know, so I'm not saying that for a fact. I'm just saying I read that. Someone posted, you know, like, don't take your kids to the Easter Bunny because kids are afraid of the Easter Bunny. So, I just remember my son was not the couple of times that I took him.
He wasn't afraid of the Easter Bunny?
No, he wasn't. So, or if he was, I didn't know it.
He never shared that with you.
Did not, and he, you know, wasn't showing any signs of fear there, so. Yeah, and so I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, did you have a bunny? So that's a good question, you know, like, a lot. So this is something that a lot of people do. I don't think it's really a good thing, but they will buy their kids at Easter either a little, like a little chick that's, you know, like colored.
Oh, yeah.
Dyed, whatever. And or a little Easter bunny, like a real one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the kid doesn't want it after Easter because they're a lot of trouble to take care of. And they're either going to, like, turn them loose or, you know, whatever. Mm. So, I'm just thinking, you know, just get a stuffed one or
yeah.
a chocolate one. And, you know, leave the real bunnies alone and yeah. all that.
So, do you know where peeps are made?
I know you hate them.
I do.
Yeah, so marshmallows. So where's marshmallow cream made? Where are marshmallows made? Well, I mean, a lot of stuff's made in Pennsylvania, so I'm just going to go with that.
Well, that's a good guess because it is Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Woo, woo, woo.
Which is about probably half an hour. Well, not even a half an hour from me. The factory there makes 5.5 million peeps a day.
No doubt, because, you know, they have peeps for everything.
Yeah.
You know,
every holiday and every color. Yeah. And yeah.
Yes. And they taste the same, no matter which color, which whatever. They're all just like a big marshmallow like.
Yeah. Do you know when peeps first came out?
So my mind is telling me 1956.
Ooh, so close.
Really?
Yep. But you went over, sorry. So you didn't win. It's 1953, actually.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, I mean, that's a pretty good guess there, people. So. Yeah.
And they used to make them with, like, you know, one of those pastry tubes, like a, you know.
Yes, like you decorate a cake yes, or whatever. Yes,
exactly. So it would take, probably 27 hours to make one peep for some reason. And now it takes about 6 minutes.
It takes that long to make one?
Yeah, I don't understand why. But it must have something to do with, like, mixing the stuff and then, you know.
Well, I mean, it does have, you know, like, so there's the inside, and then there's that little thin layer colored, you know, whatever that has to.
Yeah.
So coat that. So yeah, I mean, and also you have to put how many ever go in a pack or, you know, whatever, like they have to be joined together or else.
Right.
Maybe they're one big like block and then they're like stamped out, but you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd hate to be the like inspector person or whatever, you know. Has, like,
yeah.
Make sure all the peeps are, you know, together. Nope, you don't pass inspection.
Excuse me. Yeah. I'll especially when you're making 5.5 million of them a day.
I would be so sick if I had to eat, like, many of those. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, not the job for me. But anyways, I'm proud of myself for getting very close to the year.
Yep. Okay, well, how many jelly beans do people eat during Easter?
Well, I know you don't like jelly beans either.
I
mean, you know, people don't need to eat more than like a pack of like a small pack. I mean, because again, that's like those are so sweet. Jelly bellies. I mean, there are certain flavors of those I really do like, the coffee one, and there's popcorn. You
yuck.
Know. But again, I mean, I can't eat like a lot of them because they're just too much. Well, so you mean per person, like one person, how many do they eat?
Total.
All right. So probably you can get in a handful, like, let's say 25.
No, I'm saying total, like all the jelly beans that are consumed during Easter.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, that's going to be more like.
I'll narrow it down. Just in the U.S.
2 million.
Just in the U.S.
2 million.
No, the number is 16 million.
Wow. Yeah.
Which is enough to circle the globe about three times. or to fill a plastic Easter egg the size of a 9-story building.
Let's do that. That sounds like fun. Well, you know, no wonder we have so much obesity in the U.S. Just talking about this candy is like, wow.
So, did you know that pretzels used to be associated with Easter?
No, but I do like pretzels, so.
Why do you think they would be associated with Easter?
Well, they kind of look like, they're not really shaped like an Easter egg, but.
No.
So it goes to Germany, I'm going to say, somehow with Germany.
No. It doesn't say anything about that. It says that that pretzels, like, you know, the big soft pretzel, like, what is it, Auntie Anne pretzel kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Those resemble arms crossed in prayer.
Aww. Well, now it's going to be really hard for me to eat a pretzel because, like, I'll feel like I'm breaking the prayer hands or something, you know, because I usually, like, break my pretzels in two also.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you like the hard pretzels or soft pretzels?
Both, actually. But again, you know, there's salt.
Yeah.
I prefer the cinnamon, like. You know, the sweeter one.
So sugar is so much better.
Which it was on the soft ones.
Right.
But you can get now the chocolate covered or the white chocolate covered ones. And those are very good of the hard ones. So
of the hard ones, do you like ones that look like the soft pretzels, or do you like the pretzel rods or the nuggets?
Yeah,
or?
I like the one that looks, you know, like the praying and whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, now I'm going to have to switch to the rod ones because, like I said, when you break them, it's like, now that image is going to be in my mind. So.
Right. Well, there you go. See that? I've changed your mind.
Yeah, and now, like, all my pretzels that I've got, you know, what will I do with them? Now I have to give them to someone else and let them be the, like, bearer of the bad habits.
Yeah, I will.
Oh, well.
That's anyway, what, so.
Listen to backstory sessions, you know, it's sure to, like, break one of your dreams.
We're dream crushers that we are. All right, well, so let's talk about our episode this week. We have one of your favorite guests back.
Oh, yes, we do. The dreamy one, Rick Cosnett, is with us, and I can't wait to talk with him.
Yeah, it's been what, 2 years now?
Yeah, too long. This is our third time having him as a guest. And, you know, he's just always delightful and full of energy. And I don't know, you know, it's the accent. It's his hair has grown out some.
And he's dressed for Easter, apparently, in one of his promos.
Yeah. I mean, he looks like he is like been in the fountain of youth. I mean, he looks like he's getting younger instead of the other way around.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, he's not, I don't think he's that old, is he?
Well, no, I mean, he's not like, you know, our age old, but,
right.
but you know, like he's looking like he's, you know, like 30 maybe.
Wow. There you go. Well, yeah.
It's that color, you know? You put purple on, lilac, you know, whatever. I want to ask him about that color, you know, what he calls it. It could be like lilac, lavender. Not sure, but.
Okay.
Anyways, it looks like the Easter color, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess let's talk to Rick and, you know. See what he's been up to, because it has been a while.
Well, before we do talk to him, I just have to ask one thing. Like, when you were younger, you know, did your mom, like, you know, buy you an Easter outfit every year?
No, not that I can remember. Maybe when I was, like, real young, but. No.
So you don't remember like a bow tie and little, you know, like shorts and.
No, I only remember one picture of mine where I was wearing a bow tie.
Aww.
And that was for some. Yeah, I don't remember what it was for, to be honest with you. She took me there to get my pictures taken, and I was wearing a white shirt and a bow tie.
That is adorable.
But I was only like 4 or 5, I guess, so.
Yeah.
I don't really remember.
You should probably, like, recreate that.
Yeah, probably not. Just saying.
Well, at any rate, you know. I just thought I would ask that because I know you're not a big fan of Easter outfits like that. And I was just curious if you did that when you were little.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't like dressing up in general. I mean, wearing a suit and tie is like...
Yeah, and a bow tie. I know you are like...
Yeah, that's good against that.
Mix on those, so...
Yep.
All right, well, let's see what Rick got to say in that Australian accent.
All right, sounds good.
Well, Rick Cosnett, it has been since 2022, since we have talked to you. That is 2 years too long, so welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't believe that it's been that long. I mean, time really does fly. It's scary.
It does fly. And, you know, there have been so many things like I see all the time. You know, of course, I'm a big fan. So I'm always like looking at stuff and I was like, you know, there's a lot to talk about in this almost 2 year span. So,
yeah.
Well, the first thing I want to say, because Matt and I had this conversation, like, so the suit that I'm calling it lilac or lavender. You know, Matt clearly said he would look like a great, but it's not, you know, that color. So what is this color?
It's just the color. It's the only color. That's what I'm calling it. And it's all thanks to Elena, who is now my new stylist, I suppose, and the costume designer on 911, funnily enough. Man, those girls are incredible. And we were going to go with this peacock suit. It was peacock, just all peacock shirt, you know, a suit, which was really like, bam. And then the next thing I tried on was this one. It was just like, oh no, this is definitely it. And funny enough, I had no idea that those colors would be like the carpet would be powder pink. I just needed we needed an Easter basket and that I would have been, you know, done. But I felt like it was giving David Bowie, it was giving, I didn't even think about it really, to be honest, until afterwards. It's like,
well, I think it was an incredible color for you, so I'm going to say that was great.
Thank you. No, I loved it, and it was kind of amazing. My character on Palm Royale, which is out now on Apple TV, everyone must watch it. It is quite incredible. I'm just in love with it. But the producers came up to me just before we sat down at the premiere and they were like, oh my God, we saw you on the red carpet. We were like, Sergeant Sanka got a glow up, honey. Because my character, as you will see next week, is kind of disgruntled, sort of beaten down, sunburnt. He was in the Korean War. He's giving a lot of mask.
Well, I have a story to tell you about that. So, you know, I love that, like I said, I love that color on you. I thought you looked great. And so I was telling my friend, and her daughter was going to the prom, or, you know, like one of the little things that they have. And I don't know if it's prom, spring fling, whatever it may be.
Yeah. And
she had a dress on that very day. That's a very similar color. So I'm like, see, you know, it's a sign that that is the color. So.
It's the color of 2024.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I'm talking about.
You were a statement. For this year.
I love it. And so was she.
And I
yeah, it was just like together. Crazy. It was amazing designer, Wai Sheng, Paris. And the shoes were Alexander McQueen, and I got to keep them. So I'm very happy about that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well,
sometimes you need to spruce up, you know?
Yeah.
You got to shake it up. You need a new look. You know, take a leaf out of Madonna's book.
There you go.
So you've let the hair grow out too.
Yeah, I have. I also felt like, you know, I needed new material, new characters. And on 911, it's the hair is really giving. It's like another character on the show. And I can't wait for tonight. It's on, and next week, the second and third episodes of the cruise ship sinking are on. And it's just so fun with Angela Bassett. And yeah.
Well, let's go back to the last time I remember that we talked with you. We talked about Eddie and the Flash and, you know,
yeah,
dying and different things. But now, like, the Flash is really over, right?
Yeah. So since we spoke, Eddie turned into a supervillain who became a superhero, Cobalt Blue, because underneath everything, he was such a good person, really, that he is now holding, I guess, the space between good and evil and keeping evil at bay to a certain extent. So he's sort of in between, in limbo, just sacrificing himself for the rest of time. As is his thing. He's a very, very good person. But yeah, jealousy got the better of him, and finally, which I was really hoping for. So it was amazing. It was very full circle to go back and finish The Flash after the 8 seasons of, you know, the roller coaster that it was. And it was very healing, to be honest. I was able to let everything go very nicely and feel very satisfied by the end of it, because I really put my heart and soul into those last 4 episodes. And, you know, it was all about me, which really also was very healing for my ego. <It's so sad.
laughs> Were you surprised, you know, by the twist, I guess?
Not really. Like, I was very delighted by it, and I had sort of been steering it in that direction. And so I was really happy with what they wrote. I thought it was really cool. And yeah, I think it was very cool, because I had come a long way personally, I think. And so I was able to also put that into my work. And yeah, Eddie was, you know, he'd been in this limbo for so long that he was able to be, he had to be a little bit different, but still maintain those, you know, the throwbacks to who he was. And he was, you know, buried for in the grave for so long. So he got to be a bit grotesque coming out of it, and scared, and things we hadn't really seen from him before, which was really cool.
So what was it like to see the whole series come to an end?
It was mixed feelings, I guess. You know, sad, but it had been sad for so long for me because I died so early on. It was so tragic, not only in the story, but also for me, just as an actor. And so I would have wanted to stay on for the entire thing, and thought I was. So coming to an end was sort of like, I don't know. I mean, I would have loved it to go on and on and on, because I also felt so happy, genuinely, for the people who are still on there, who are, a lot of them, some of my very good friends. And so, you know, I loved that it was going on, and it was so successful. And that also was in turn helping me, because I was doing so many Comic-Cons. And so, yeah, it was sad to end, but I think it had to at some point. And yeah, it was just kind of absolutely motherfucking crazy, the whole thing, from beginning to end, crazy.
Oh, was it the fans? So, you know, with Comic-Con, I'm sure you got to hear a lot of feedback. So what were they saying?
Well, I mean, it was hard because in the beginning, they were all also the writer at the time didn't really know what they were doing with my character. So at first, I was signed on to be the original Flash J. Garrick. It was in my contract. And then just before we started shooting, he was like, oh, no, did we tell you you're actually not going to be J. Garrick. You are going to be the Reverse Flash or something. And I was like, oh, my God, okay. And then just before we started filming episode 2, it was like, oh, actually, as I was about to take a bite of steak at a dinner, you're actually not the Reverse Flash. You're now his great. You're now his great, 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 great grandfather. I mean, doesn't sound as cool, but like I'm here for like, you know, collaboration. And I'm a bit of a pushover. So I was, you know, at the time, especially I was a young actor. I was just like, great. Whatever you guys want to do is fine. But yeah, so it was a bit of a roller coaster because then everyone was like, then I couldn't tell people that I was going to die. So then we were doing like all this press for TCAs and we were all really sad, but we had to pretend that we were like, everything was fine. And they're like, can you tell us anything? I was like, no, I can't tell you anything. That's going to be cool. And yeah. And then people would always ask me like, I bet you're going to be Zoom. I bet you're going to be this. I bet you're going to be that. And it was kind of disappointing because I knew that I wasn't. So, you know, my character was sort of just left, which is why it was so great that finally, you know, he got to bookend the whole thing and come back. But by that stage, the storylines had really got crazy because they'd been had so much success. They had to do so many episodes. And yeah, I mean, I thought it was fabulous. But, you know, I wasn't watching the whole way through. Because it was too sad for me to watch. Yeah.
Are you a person that it's hard to keep a secret? Like, that would be so hard for me to not tell.
No, I'm actually, I'm the opposite. Like, I'm very easily take things to the grave. And I don't often, tell very many people. And I've realized that people are not very good at keeping secrets because I have told some very close friend secrets recently, and I've been there when they have just divulged it to someone, like, oh, and I'm God. Just like, ah, shocked.
Well, you know, you can tell us secrets. We will not.
We'll edit them out.
No, that's it. I'm burnt. Sorry.
No, but like at Christmas or whatever, you know, like I can't wait when I give someone a present. Like I just want them to open it because.
Oh my God, that's amazing. You're like Surprise Sue. Do you know Kristen Wiig's character Surprise Sue on SNL? Yeah. Which you just can't keep a secret. And they have all these different scenarios where there's the one where they're like, okay, we're getting engaged. Woo. And they're like, Aunt Sue, like, please don't say anything. Cause you know, the parents are coming like in 5 minutes and like, we don't want to, you know, and she's like, her catchphrase is, oh my God. They're gonna come in here and they're not gonna know. She can't do it, and she's trying, so she tries to knock herself out with the ornaments, and then she walks through the wind, like the window pane, like smashes. And anyway, Kristen is one of my favorite people, one of my favorite actors, comedians. And I've watched so many videos of her. And so to be with her in Palm Royale is really just beyond a dream come true because I never even dreamed of. So, you know, just to have a small part with her and with all these other actors was just so special. And she was so nice, so lovely, so funny. She really exceeded all my expectations. on a working level in between takes and everything. So that was also really life affirming, you know.
Cool.
Well, we almost got to interview you for Shoulder Dance, but then you were gone, I think, to maybe Australia.
Australia, probably. Yeah.
Yes, I think so. But Shoulder Dance, tell us about that, because that looks like a beautiful film.
Yeah, it really, really is. And that I filmed just after I spoke to you last, I think. And it was just incredible for me personally in my craft. It just felt like something magical happened that I'd been trying to make happen for a very long time. Now, having been out of drama school for, God, almost 20 years. And, you know, it was just, the chemistry was amazing. The writing was really good. And I just went into it every morning, like with everything I had, and did all these exercises to get there, because for me, it was a bit of a challenge. I was playing this very confident, very sexually driven, wild, crazy, straight guy who is so comfortable with his sexuality that he might swing to the other team, maybe just 1%, you know. If they're there, sort of thing. I sort of felt like he had Jason Momoa energy, which is some of the best kind of energy I think a human can have. Mm-hmm. Having met him a couple of times, done Comic-Cons with him, he's just the most generous, free in his body, in his skin, powerful, you know, very, I don't know how to explain it, but everything seems to be delicious and sexual, not only because he's just so divine, but he just really like laps life up and has this incredible sparkle in his eye. So I was really going for that with my character of Roger. And I also got to use my natural accent, whatever the fuck that is. It's kind of Dorit for the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. But it's, you know, that was very freeing for me too. And also, I know people like this, but also because I really related to it, because it's these two friends who were very close in their teenage years, and then Roger left when he was 16, the USA, to go to England. And so he's got this very sort of international thing happening, but also I left Zimbabwe when I was 16, and I have all these incredible memories of being a wild teenager, really. So, you know, at first it was just substitution work that I was doing, and then the other actors were so spectacular that it just, you know, it became very real very quickly, because all of us were doing great work and our imaginations were kind of going crazy. So we all became very close very quickly. So yeah, I mean, people always ask us, did you know each other before? And they can't believe that we didn't at all. Because yeah, it's such a vibe. The film is such a vibe, and it's super, super fun. It's like so much fun. And me and Maggie Gayhar, who is in Gotham, a lot of she and other stuff too, but you know, she's my girlfriend, and we're almost like the villains in Annie. We just come in and fuck shit up, and we bring the drugs, and it's in the Hamptons, and things get wild, and it's all about, you know, all these questions I think that are very topical, like monogamy and what does it mean to, you know, and what people need in their relationship to move on, and what are they scared of, and scared of commitment and love, and what holds us back, and why, you know, we're scared of that, and all that cool stuff. So yeah, it was fun. It was so fun.
Did you learn anything, like, you know, in monogamy and love, and like, did you learn anything that changed your mind from being in the movie? Like,
that's a very, very good question.
Yeah.
Personally, well, not really. I have my views, you know. I have my from my own growing up and my own repression, my own, the cult. Okay. The cult is strong. The cult of, like, you know, a mother, a father, and kids, married and monogamous, is very strong. And I feel like, for me, it's, you know, yeah, it's a cult, but it's a cult for a reason. It does work, but if you are different or anything outside of that, you know, obviously it's got better now, but it used to be that you were shunned from society, you know, having a child out of wedlock, being a single parent, even being not attracted to the same, the opposite sex, and all that sort of stuff, which is, like, natural, unfortunately. Well, I mean, fortunately natural, but unfortunately society's isn't natural. So, yeah, very interesting. But I guess it might have. No, I was already doing that before. I was reading all these books about it. But at the end of the day, it was very interesting in terms of just the Minoi part of things. Yes, it did bring up all these questions. I don't know if it changed my mind, though, because I'm still going through all sorts of, like, personal journeys.
Well, at least you thought about
it. But it did, yeah, it did, you know, I think it what it did do for me was it looks at love and what, and but you just have to really go for it with love. You know, it's worth it, even though it is terrifying to be vulnerable like that. And also, if I'm truly honest, yes, it did open my mind up in terms of being mature enough to know that it's okay for, you know, you to be over here, your partner to be somewhere else, and for you to want the best for your partner and yourself in that relationship, and that sometimes maybe not being so jealous, you know, that part is not healthy, that if you just really let it go and it's more you become more magnetic, you and your partner, if you just really relax. Yeah, which is hard for me to do, but not Roger.
Wow. So how did you get this role with 911? Like,
I don't know. I was like, I had like two or three auditions that day. I just did a tape when I was in Sydney, and it just made me think of the White Lotus, because my character, his name is Cruise Director Julian. Cruise Director Julian Innes, and I just thought of Murray Bartlett in White Lotus, you know, the hotel manager in season one. I was like, yes, great. No, we'd be so happy to help you out. But underneath, he's a complete mess doing coke, you know, in the office, and Australian. And so, you know, I had the bleached hair. I had the below decks look. So I was like, okay, I know this. I've got this. So I just also did kind of my natural accent because, you know, it makes sense, an international cruise director. And I think it just sat really well on me, like, especially with the hair. Like, I feel like he's got a Shopping Channel vibe. I mean, he's got a bit of a, like, fake tan thing happening. He's a bit prissy. He's a bit bisexual, you know, or just not even bisexual, like, just those kind of straight guys who are quite feminine.
Yeah.
So it was really, like, in hindsight, I just didn't think about it, which is so wonderful. But creativity is a funny thing, I think. In the past, sometimes I've stifled all the colors that I could play, because I'm thinking, oh no, this character is supposed to be like this or supposed to be like that, instead of just uncovering what you have. And then it just works. And I was also scared because I filmed it and then I thought, oh God, it's probably absolutely awful. And I think this is me done. And then I saw ADR. Actually, the afternoon of the premiere for Palm Royale, I was doing ADR. Funnily enough, right where we filmed Palm Royale at Paramount. It was quite a little momentous day for me personally. Because I just saw, like, me and Angela Bassett, like, just doing, like, sinking with a lot of water and just water rushing and everything. And it really works because my character is so pathetic and she is so strong, you know, that it needed that. And I was just so happy that I went with my instinct on it because it really works. And I'm very happy with my work. And my sister FaceTimed me as I was out there and she's like, I can't believe you're there and you filmed Palm Royale and then you're there for, you know, with the kind of I guess, actors that I've always wanted to work with. So, yeah, it was super fun. But, yeah, that's sort of how cruise director Julian started. And then it was just, yeah, it was just so fun to be there to support Angela, you know, and Peter Krause doing, just being amazing and be one of the people on the ship. But yeah, I spent a lot of time with Angela and Peter and the rest of the crew. It was like pretty much almost 2.5 months, because what they do in over these 3 episodes is insane. We had a tank. It was like bigger than Ben-Hur. I mean, they built this million-dollar, God, I can't believe, I remember what they call it, similar to like a spindle, but it's so that the cruise ship could go completely upside down. So they built the set so that the set could rotate 360 degrees.
Wow.
And people are hanging on. I mean, it's based on the Poseidon Adventure. We're doing all these stunts and I mean, it's just crazy stuff. And the last day I was terrified up on this, like, I won't say where, but you know, the height that I was at and things I had to do in the cold water and shivering. And then I couldn't hear anything and I couldn't understand the director's accent. And he's saying, so, and I'm like, what? And they're all shouting it. And I'm like, oh, crawl. I was, you know, hearing crawl. Oh my God. So funny.
Do you like doing your own stunts? Or would you prefer a stunt double?
Well, I like to give other people a chance. It's very, very selfless of me. You know what? Like, at first, I'm always like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, but I really get into it. And then I'm like, I'm like, you can't stop me. Like, on The Flash.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, fuck, I've got all this fighting. And like, you know, I was really like, and then we're doing the rehearsal with the entire crew, the director, Grant, Gustin, and the stunt, you know, my stunt double's doing the thing. And I just out of nowhere, like it just came out of me. I'm like, there's a punch there. Sorry. There's a punch in there. And like Grant's like, wrecked. Like, like totally not my area, but I'm like now correcting the stunt people and the stunt coordinator. All of a sudden, like, I'm the expert.
How to win,
because friends. I got so into it. And then I was like, let's do it again. Like, I'm so into these punches and, you know, so it's in me. And then of course as well, I was terrified when we went up the first time. And I'm like, I want to do it again. I can do it again. You guys, I can do this, I can do that. Yeah. I get so excited, but God, you know, you got to really, I mean, I have to rip myself over the line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess you could end up getting seriously hurt and that wouldn't be good for your career. So.
Well, I think that's also the thing. As I get older, I'm sort of like,
yeah,
maybe not that, like, for me, because you realize that you are breakable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And, but, you know, it was very safe on 911. It's Disney, so they had a lot of safety stuff. And but it was still like, you know, I had a cord connected, but then it was like,
right,
it's all very quick and something can happen. And I don't know, I was like, I'm going to swing into the, you know, it's just like, my imagination's very overactive.
Weren't you doing some sort of web show?
The Vaucluse Daily, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Still doing that, or has that ended? Or
yes, we're still developing that, but we have come leaps and bounds, because I was in Australia doing that for a couple of months, end of last year. So we're still very excited about that, and it's going to be a huge thing. It's going to be a huge hit. Okay.
Awesome.
It's really cool. It's really fun, but yeah, it's, I mean, I'm telling you, like, coming up with genius, like, a genius script is really, really hard.
Yeah.
But it's happening. But yeah, we're lucky that we've sort of had this crazy workshop. I mean, we've developed these characters over so many years now. Mm-hmm. So it's going to hit us, I think, when the time is right. But, you know, we've written probably over, like, I don't know, 60 tiny little Instagram sketches,
right,
which has been super helpful and good practice workshopping for us in terms of just having to cut out the fat, having to, you know, land the little jokes and who these women are and how they sort of come across on in that medium.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. People love Jill and Sue. We love Jill and Sue. And we've got merchandise now as well, cool, which is going crazy. So, yeah, it's all on the Instagram at the Vaucluse Daily, Jill and Sue.
So, you're going to do more of that and in the future? Or, I mean, I guess.
Yeah, we are developing the TV show.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which has always been our goal since day one.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just, yeah, it's taken us like 15 years. because, you know, it was, we always sort of had it in our minds. At first, it was kind of just a fun joke. And then we used to do Christmas parties.
Right.
We hosted our friend's wedding as them. And I was always, we nearly filmed a little pilot / teaser just in 2010 before I left Australia. And then, you know, I was busy over here, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it's been in the works for a while. So we're getting there slowly.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll be looking forward to hearing more about that when the time comes.
Yeah, shame, hey. It's very it's also very Australian, South African, English kind of. It's going to be an Australian production, but hopefully we'll be able to then sell the rights for the US version. You know how they do that?
Yeah.
And they usually fuck it up.
Yeah.
Except if it's like The Office or Shameless, they really did a great job with those.
Yeah.
But this is quite niche, so we'll see.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out, Rick, you know, in our international audience, we are number 3 in Ghana. So we've been trying to figure out, like, I wonder why that is, you know? Like,
wait, your podcast is number 3 in Ghana?
Well, Ghana is
out of all the podcasts?
No.
So that works.
What's that?
Yeah.
Out of all
that's incredible, you guys.
Out of all
you have no idea why?
No.
Oh my god, that's crazy. That's so cool. Oh my god, so, I met an incredible actress here from Ghana on my first job that got me my SAG card. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah, no idea why, how it happened or whatever, but you know.
When did this happen?
It's just like, you know, sent them our way or something.
We just yeah, it's definitely the African like, thing.
Hey. You know how we got there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I did. That is so cool.
Yeah.
You know, Zimbabwe is definitely closer than the US to Ghana.
Yeah.
But still kind of far. But yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, they're like a distant, I mean, Canada is even like a distant number 4, which is weird. So, yeah.
That's amazing. I love that.
You know, like.
What's that?
We're doing something right. You've almost
made 100%. 100%.
Like, yeah.
I would love to think it was me, but.
You know. What is next? Like, what things do you have going on that you can tell us about, like, for the future?
Well, my fingers are crossed for another season of Palm Royale. So we will know that very soon.
Awesome.
And then Jill and Sue is going gung-ho at the moment. So that's what I'm working on right now. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to do still? Like, I mean, you've played a wide variety of characters in the last
I have. I would love to play Richard the Lionheart. You know, something very strong, very gritty, and just complete, like, animal. Brave and all that good stuff. I feel like I still haven't really done that, you know. I've done Eddie and Roger, who have that sort of vibe, but I would really like to lean into that more. You know, something military. Mm. I play a lot of cops, but like never like a Marine or something.
Mm.
So that would be cool. David Bowie, I want to play him 100%. And I also want to play like a Zimbabwean farmer or do something in Africa. Those are probably top of my list right now. Yeah.
Well, are you still writing like outside of, I know you were writing a play. Are you still like working on, have you been on stage doing plays?
Yeah, I haven't written a play actually, but I was doing a play, new work last year, which was really, really great. And that was such a wonderful experience with, such beautiful actors. And yeah, that was great. That was really cool to be back on stage.
Does it just feel magical, like in a different way to be on stage versus TV?
Yeah, it does. It does. It's what I, you know, it's how I trained, I suppose, how most people do, because it's more accessible at, you know, university and just wherever, you know. I was out in the middle of Toowoomba. I used to do plays there at the Repertory Theatre at high school, and then I went to drama school, and then Sydney, you know, a lot of plays. So, and I've done probably about 6 or 7 plays here in the US. But yeah, I find myself very much at home there. It's always what I've loved to do. My parents used to do theatre when we were very, very little, just community theatre, and I fell in love with it there. So it's the same thing. It's the same art form to me. Of course, there are differences and little craft things that you have to tweak. It's, you know, especially voice-wise and performance-wise, it was really good because this theatre in particular, and because they had a projector, there was this kind of underlying noise, and the acoustics were not amazing because they usually have shows in there. Actually, Carol Channing's been on that stage, and Jane Fonda, and, you know, but just in terms of doing like more like concerts. So we weren't mic'd or anything. So, you know, we really had to shout our very intimate lines in a way, which you have to do on a lot of Broadway theaters as well. So that was very cool to sort of go back to that. But to be honest, it was one of the most projected that I've had to be. So that was cool figuring that out, you know. Yeah.
So I just had one more question for you before we let you go, because we are coming up on your time. But I think you told us a story about how you wanted to meet someone, and when the time came to meet them, you weren't able to talk to them. Does that sound familiar? I think it was an actress that you wanted to meet.
Was this not last time we talked, or
it was like the first time we talked, I think.
Oh yeah, that was Toni Collette. Yeah,
So, has there been any?
There has not. I think, you know, I've come to the conclusion that I should just let the Queen be. I should just let her live, and I don't think she needs that kind of energy in her life. So I, you know, have retired the idea that we're going to be best friends, because that's just not how it works. And
so do you find,
I will always be once a fan, I think.
Yeah.
Always a fan. And it's a beautiful thing. And I'm just going to stay in my lane and just always support her till the very end, you know.
That's funny.
And if I meet her, great.
Hopefully, but you'll be able to talk,
you know, it'll
to
just
her.
Be more like little moments, yes, maybe. But yeah, so I mean, have I moved out of my stalk era? Probably. Maybe this is it.
Do you find that it's easier to talk to people now, like, you know, more famous people you've met, you know?
No, I don't really, actually, at all. I find it fine if I don't really completely admire them as an actor.
Oh, I see.
But if I do, then my heart rate increases like way too high.
Yeah.
And I can't really be myself, which I have noticed on Palm Royale, because thank God I was fine between action and cut. I was so relaxed. Mm-hmm. And then all the rest of the time, I'm just like, I'm at 100. Don't say anything. Just be quiet, Rick, and go home. You had a great day.
That's funny.
I know.
All right, Kat, go ahead. One more.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I guess it's just like, what can you tell me, Rick, like that you haven't told me? Like, tell me something, you know, like off the wall crazy.
Wow. Put you on the spot.
Or have done. Yeah. Anybody that you're stalking, you know, like since that or anything.
Well, I mean, Alice and Janney, I've always been completely obsessed with, and I think I need to stay away from her because, you know, our storylines overlapped a little bit in Palm Royale, but hardly at all. But there was one of my favorite days where I just had this little line at the end of the scene sort of thing, right? So drive in and get out of the car and come up, and her and Josh Lucas were behind the camera on my coverage at the very end, and Allison was just being the most animated, fabulous, and like pointing to Josh, saying it was him. And it was just so wonderful. They were both doing the most behind the camera for my coverage, which I just thought was so generous and so fun. She still has no idea who I am, and maybe that's for the best.
She probably does.
But yeah. She's just such a great actress. I admire her so much. Kristen Wiig, Laura Dern. It's been an absolute pleasure to just be in the same space as these women, these legends.
Mm.
Well, that's just the way it is to talk to you. Every time that you're our guest, it's just an amazing experience. No matter what kind of day it's been leading up to it or whatever is going on as craziness, it's just always... You know, like you just have an energy about you that it always makes you a favorite. So
God, thank you so much for saying that. Well, yeah, who knows? Next time we talk, hopefully something else very interesting and spectacular will happen.
Well, you well, you can't go through life without it. You just
well, hopefully it won't be 2 years, and you'll come back and see us again.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love that, you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's been
super fun, as always.
Thank you, and you just keep bringing the color to the year.
Thank you. I will continue down that track as my hair continues to get more and more ridiculous.
We look forward to seeing those pictures.
Amazing.
All right, Rick. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, guys. Right. Cheers.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.